Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy Wednesday. We're getting closer.
Yeah, our typical Wednesday preview, and that'd be no different this week. The Packers are playing, about to be in the NFC Championship game, and we're here to provide a full press coverage of that. And, I mean, really, what do those names mean? Where do those words come from? And, I mean, here we have today the man behind it all, as well as the Full Press Coverage Bucks managing editor. But for our purposes, it's the big boss, Mr. Ian Glendon. Ian, welcome.
Thank you for having me. You know, I was thinking, I was like, you know what? Thinking of this name was probably the best thing I've ever done, and it took me far too long that I'd like to admit. It was a painstaking process to come up with what's pretty basic name.
Well, and there you go. At least you covered it all. So
yeah, exactly.
We're here to talk about, obviously, the games that will be happening on Championship Sunday. A little bit of news first. I know, Jesse, you've dove into this, so I'll let you take the lead on this next piece of news that, you know, something I was kind of hoping to hear about maybe in August or through the season, but, I mean, better late than never, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it was kind of silly, like Monday, when the Ravens released Tremont Williams. I'm like, well, you know, okay, no big deal. We can't sign him. You know, he was on their 53-man roster. But good thing Gudis kind of playing checkers here. Chess instead of checkers. And since he is not owed any money, his contract expired in 2020. There's some loopholes. They said it's still a little bit fuzzy, but as far as they're saying, he got cut. They were done with their season. So it's like he was just on the street. So the Packers have flown him in on a private jet today, and it looks like he might get signed by the Green Bay Packers. I don't expect him to come in, you know, and just be a shutdown guy or nothing, but a nice little depth piece. And guess what? He doesn't fumble punts. So it would be great to see a longtime Packer come back home.
Yeah, I mean, if he's still got his legs, I mean, Tavon Austin hasn't really been anything special as a punt returner. He's only there because Tyler Irvin's not available for that reason. So, I mean, if Williams can come in and at the very least just do that, that'll be fine. But knowing the Bucks and knowing how potent the wide receiver core is, and you know, anyone reading Jesse's article on Full Press Coverage, keys to victory, one of those was stopping this stacked receiver core. And it's not just Mike Evans, not just Chris Godwin. I mean, Jesse, you mentioned both Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson in that article. You know, if the Bucks are going four, even five wide, they're going to need corners on the field to help cover those guys. So I see Williams getting into maybe more dime situations, probably more than anything if he gets in on defense. But good point with the punt returning.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at him last year, he was like top five rated slot corner. So he's been in our system, and really he got signed, I think, week nine by Baltimore, and he's been fine in the slot. So, hey, you know, no reason not to kick the tires on a guy that's been here before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's funny because the Ravens, they're loaded secondary as well. And I mean, two teams that already had talent at corner, but recognized, you know, his veteran leadership, his instincts. I mean, he's been around, seen it all for so long. Part of a Super Bowl team, hoping to make that too with the Packers here as he returns. For, I guess this is what, his third stint, if he does in fact sign?
Yes, sir. Yeah, third time around.
Hopefully more winning Super Bowls than the second time. And at least the equal amount as the first time. But, you know, before we even talk about the Super Bowl, there is another game to get to. But one of them, including, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who did defeat the New Orleans Saints. And it appears in wake of that loss, it does appear that Drew Brees is retiring. And I know Philip Rivers today released an official statement, claiming his retirement as well. So, Ian, I know how much you love talking about quarterbacks. Any thoughts about both of those, the careers of Philip Rivers and Drew Brees?
Well, I'll start with Philip Rivers. You know, very, very nice career. It's hard to argue the longevity. He did put up some stats, you know, with the touchdowns and the yards, both in the top 10 all time. He just, I believe, just passed Dan Marino with 421 touchdown passes. And, you know, most impressive perhaps is his consecutive starts. I think he started his final 215 games. So very nice career. I I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I know some people out there were questioning people who didn't think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Well, I think that's a little foolish. I don't think he's necessarily a Hall of Famer because, well, in my opinion, in this generation, he's probably in that 6 or 7 range when it comes to best at his position. And I don't think that's indicative of being a Hall of Fame player, because I think it means you're the best of the best of the best. So with that said, Drew Brees, again, this is something we're all expecting for him to do. And I think it's going to happen sooner or later. I think we saw the interactions he had with Tom Brady after the game, and there's a lot of looking back and just kind of taking it all in. And I think that's a pretty fine indication. And I'll say this, there's not too much different from Drew Brees and Philip Rivers, except for a Super Bowl. And I'll put it this way. I agree with Kyle in a lot of things when it comes to Drew. I think his career, I guess his legacy has been greatly inflated, in my opinion, or at least it seems as though that's the case as he's heading out. And look, I think ultimately he's going to get into the Hall of Fame, and another quarterback who I think just had a really nice career. But if you're going to ask me where do I think he ranks among the quarterbacks, his contemporaries, well, you know, let's start with 4 and work our way backwards, because I think that's the highest he could possibly get. And then that's where I start to question, how great was he? He was great, but, you know, to me, no MVPs, no All Pros, 1 Super Bowl, a lot of seasons where you're throwing 15 to 19 interceptions, a lot of losing records. I feel like I'm trashing on Drew Brees. Come on, Kyle, help me out. Am I going a little too far here?
Not at all.
Okay, good. You guys all love it. Okay, I'm on the right podcast then.
You're not denying that he's a Hall of Famer, right? Like, I mean, I knew you're taking that stance with Rivers. I don't think you'd make the same claim with Brees.
Yeah, I personally do not think Philip Rivers is a Hall of Famer. I'll be honest. I think I would be undecided technically about Drew Brees, although I believe 100% he's going to get in. Does that make sense? Like, I honestly think there is merit to. So I'll lay it out for you, like, kind of how I view it. So Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. I think those 3 quarterbacks were clearly better than Drew Brees over this generation. And I think, again, you include Peyton Manning because they played the majority of their career together. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, who has 3 MVPs and is in another championship game and could very well go to another Super Bowl. And then, obviously, Tom Brady. So that's when I think you get into a discussion. Okay, Drew Brees, he had a fine career, but I don't necessarily believe that throwing for 5,000 yards is a good thing. I don't think, or it's not indicative of a good thing. I think in rare situations it can be. Brady, Mahomes, they obviously had great seasons and also threw 5,000 yards. Peyton Manning as well. But for the most part, you see these high yardage marks from quarterbacks that are on bad teams who turn the ball over a lot. Look at Jameis Winston last year. And you look at, excuse me, Drew Brees' stretch of 5,000 yards passing. And they all came in 7 and 9 seasons where he turned the ball over, like I said, 17, 18 times just by throwing interceptions. So to me, I think a lot of that is just strangely glossed over. Yeah. And I don't want to sound like I'm saying the guy had a terrible career. No, that's not the case. I think, again, you play as long as he does. You do. I mean, accumulating all the stats, it is a nice thing. It's not the be-all, end-all. And again, you have to be able to look at it objectively, especially for, say, quarterbacks that have started their career post-2013. And you're like, oh, look at all these. Well, yeah, I mean, that's how the game is trending. Of course, the number is going to be a little higher. But his claim to fame right now is obviously being second in the touchdown passing hierarchy. But, you know, his passing yards total and besides that, I mean, there's a lot of players in the Hall of Fame that have 1 Super Bowl. There's a lot of players that aren't in the Hall of Fame that have 1 or more Super Bowls. So that's where I sit. I'm like, well, if we're grading on my hard scale, maybe I don't put him in, you know, or maybe I make him wait a little bit and see what happens with how we view his career after a few years. So I guess that's kind of a long answer to say. I don't know. Honestly, the more I think about it, the more I get on the fence. I think ultimately, I think yes, he is. I think definitely people are going to put him in the Hall of Fame. I just don't know at that time if I'm going to really believe it or not. So,
I guess I'm the Drew Brees lover on this show. That sounds horrible. Even saying it makes me want to puke. So a few things to defend him. First, he does actually have a first team All-Pro season. He does have one. In 2006, led the league in receiving yards, led the Saints to a 10-6 season his first year there. It really turned that team around. 4,400 yards, led the league. That's about it though. 26 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Like, you know, that's pretty good rates. Decent. But yeah, a while ago. We'll say, you know, you're talking about in the merit of a 5,000 yard season, and you're right, most of them came in losing seasons. However, 2011, give him credit there. 13-3, he threw for a career high 5,476 yards, career high 46 touchdowns. Actually had one more than Rodgers that year. You know, he also had more than double the amount of interceptions. So clearly the MVP went to the right player in 2011. But, you know, so I'll give him his due credit there. I feel like the way you kind of view Brees is like, oh, I'm not sure. He probably will, but I'm not sure he should. That's kind of how I feel about Rivers and Eli and Romo. And, you know, everyone talks about those guys as Hall of Famers. I view them appropriately as senior nominees, and maybe Eli's got the two Super Bowls. Maybe he gets in the modern era, but really I think eventually Rivers will get in, but I'm thinking he probably waits quite a while, like maybe to a senior nominee where he's waiting 25 years to get in. They probably won't, like, it's probably, that's even calling that's a stretch. They'll probably get him in the modern era, but I could see him waiting double digit amount of years before for eligibility. Brees, if he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, he's probably going to get in a year two. I'd probably say that's appropriate, because as much as, you know, I love to criticize him, he is still certainly among the 25, maybe even top 20 greatest quarterbacks ever. And, you know, the team, you know, some seasons weren't so great, but he had a lot of good winning seasons. And I mean, you know, his career record, 172, 114, that's obviously not all with the Saints. There's some years with the Chargers.
Would you agree, though, that he at the very best would be the fourth best quarterback of this generation?
Every single year.
And I mean, do you, like, does Russell Wilson overlap enough? Because if that's the case, then he has to be fifth to me. And do you count Brett Favre as well? Because then he's probably sixth. So you're right that he's no higher than fourth for sure.
That's where it kind of gets murky, because Mike and I talked about this on FBC Radio, and I brought up Russell Wilson. And I think he's pushing that. I think he needs to play, like, I don't know, a couple more years. I don't know. I feel like he's not in that career landscape yet. The same way I feel like Patrick Mahomes is far from that, because you can't project 20 years off of three. I mean, that's silly. I always use the comparison, like, if a quarterback throws 5 and 6 touchdowns in his first two games of the season, no one realistically believes he's going to throw 88 touchdowns that season. That's you have to use some sort of logic and you know, concept of what the game is. So it's so hard to project so early on. Russell Wilson's kind of getting into that. He's almost 10 years in. Obviously, he has the criteria. So, yeah, I agree with you. You could potentially make an argument that Russell Wilson is ahead of him. So then all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, Drew Brees. Yeah, he had a great career. He might be one of the such and such number of quarterbacks to have ever played the game. But how good was he among his peers? And again, I would think that these people that are in the Hall of Fame, like these slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famers, are all among maybe the top three of their era. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I feel like after you get into 4 or 5 range, it gets a little murky. And I do think that perhaps there are some questions. But at the end of the day, I do think ultimately he'll get in. It's just, I don't know. It's I'm hoping to open the minds of some people. And I'm hoping that this might be the case. Maybe Kyle will turn around and be like, you know what? I haven't been harsh enough on Drew Brees, and I will have done my job.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, now if he is retiring, you don't ever have to talk about him again. So I'm fine with that too.
That's true.
And I mean, speaking of retirement, I mean, it's really, I think entering this season, even like maybe, you know, 48 hours ago, we probably said at the end of this year, there's as many as 4 quarterbacks that could be retiring. Rivers officially, it appears Brees joining him. We've still got Ben Roethlisberger. and of course, probably the least likely out of all of them to retire, because he's still the best, even though he is the oldest, is the player going to be playing in the NFC Championship game against the Packers this week. So why don't we get to that game? Packers-Bucks, rematch of the Week 6 contest, in which the Bucks won. I don't even want to remember the score. It was bad. Pretty sure the Packers only put up 10 points. Shows how much research I did. I didn't even look back into it. But the, you know, the scars from that game remain in my memory, so I don't actually need to look it up to know, you know, what went wrong there. So Jesse, I kick it off to you. I know you had your four keys to the matchup for the Packers article, but is there anything you wanted to start with talking about this championship game?
I guess the first thing I'll start off with, I think this is the two best teams. Well, actually, on both sides, I'll say that AFC and NFC, the two best teams are playing, right? Tampa Bay was better than the Saints overall, in my opinion, even though the Saints won the first two matchups, whatever, whatever. I think you got the two best teams in the two in the best situation, you know, in the weather, in the cold, in Wisconsin. Brady can handle that as much as we just dog Breeze. I think it would have been a cakewalk if he came up there. So, yeah, I think it's. This is a legend game, right? You know, the two best quarterbacks that I've seen in my lifetime, you know, we can debate all we want, but I think these are the top two in my lifetime. So this is real deal football to me.
Yeah, first career playoff match. And I know as Packers fans, you know, they've come close. There's been at least three instances where the team that the Patriots played in the Super Bowl was the team that beat the Packers in the playoffs, with, you know, varying degrees of what round that was. So, you know, we've had those opportunities almost there. Really, as much as Packers fans, I know, I was really hoping the Saints would win just because of how bad the Bucks beat the Packers earlier, and that a bit of that fear of, could that repeat again? Is it going to be the same thing last year? You know, you replay a team that kicked your teeth in the regular season and did so again, you know, so I didn't want to flash back to that instance.
But that's fine. Let's flash back to it, because if you look at that game, it's that game has never happened before. If you think about it, they had no penalties, no turnovers, and no sacks. That hasn't happened since, I think we talked about it, as like 1949. So it was just a crazy game, and my hat's off to the Bucks. But I mean, you don't see Rodgers throwing multiple interceptions. You don't see 28 points in the second quarter, right? And it's kind of funny. The Packers, the highest scoring team in the second quarter, and we got our teeth kicked in the second quarter, right? It was just a crazy game. And it, not to say that the Bucks didn't kick our butts, because they kicked our butts. But I, you know, like a lot of, you see a lot of talk right now, you know, going back to that game, both these teams are totally different, right? Like that game is lifetimes ago. It doesn't even matter. It could have been played 14 years ago. It really doesn't matter going into this one.
And part of me thinks, because it's also an anomaly that the Packers didn't play nearly that bad at any point the rest of the year. You could maybe argue the Jaguars game. And if you're going to play also just as bad in any game, it's against the one win team that you still end up beating anyway.
And we still didn't turn the ball over, you know, so that's huge. You know,
it wasn't, that's the thing. It wasn't as bad. Like it was clearly a step below. So it does really seem like that Bucks game was a blip on the radar, that is a massive anomaly. Cause even in the other losses, the Colts loss in overtime, you know, the Vikings lost, but games the Packers could have won in both instances and came really close to doing so. And I guess that's the key, is can you get into that situation, which is, and as much as, again, maybe a bit of the fear of the matchup, also embracing the fact that we're getting to see Rodgers and Brady in the playoffs. We've never seen this before. And as football fans, this is quite a treat that we're in for. And as Packers fans and as Aaron Rodgers fans, I think this is actually very key to his legacy. I know, Ian, you were you know, a lot of angry tweets about a lot of different comments. And you, I think one of them was someone saying, how important is this game for Tom Brady's legacy? In the grand scheme of things, unless Aaron Rodgers wins three in a row starting this year, and you know, could start, you know, then he has four Super Bowl rings, and you can say, oh, and he even got one head to head to Brady, that's when that would start to be threatened. But it, outside of miracle performances by the Packers, which we would really like, but in the realistic viewpoint of that, probably doesn't happen. No, but I think this is actually probably more important for Rodgers' legacy. How high up does he start ranking in the greatest of all times? Because I think we can start. I don't think top five yet. I think certainly top 10, though. And, you know, a victory against Brady and a second Super Bowl ring, you know, en route in that regard, maybe helps push him up, and maybe never to the point where he's contending with Brady for the title of the GOAT. But he could be you know, among that next handful, that next tier, maybe even in the same tier as Brady, but just maybe never as the number one. But so I think Rodgers, you know, in terms of legacy, probably is much more on the line here than Brady does.
I agree with that 100%. It's not an insult towards Rodgers. We talked about this, Kyle, that he can vault himself in out of a group that consists of the Steve Youngs of the world, the Drew Breeses, you know, depending on who you ask, where they rank him. Again, I wouldn't put him that high, but there's a collection of quarterbacks that had really good careers, won a Super Bowl, and had a couple nice accolades. This would all of a sudden, you know, assuming Rodgers adds the third MVP, would also give him a second Super Bowl, which would put him, excuse me, in that next level. Now, this really does nothing for Brady. And by that, I mean, the only thing that could work for or anything that changes his legacy will only be positive at this point. Because, you know, you got to consider, too, if he ends up beating, obviously he already beat Breeze, goes through the Packers and Rodgers, and then ends up going up against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and the Bucks beat all three of those teams. Well, we know how narratives work, and that's only probably going to inflate his legacy. Although, in reality, his legacy is so firm and cement. I mean, it's not going to budge. To your point, though, and this is kind of how, and this is why, you know, sometimes you just got to kind of ignore that aspect of Rodgers chasing the GOAT, because like you said, the Packers could go out and win three straight Super Bowls, and it would only start a discussion. And that's assuming that Brady doesn't continue to keep doing what he's doing. And this is kind of the thing I have with folks that say, oh, Mahomes is on pace to be the GOAT. Well, I'm like, how can it be on pace to chase a guy that's still playing and still, you know, in the mix every single year? That doesn't make sense. So I think in terms of overall legacy, I think this could do wonders for Aaron Rodgers. And rightfully so. And it would be a very deserving honor that would get him into that maybe tier right below that, you know, GOAT level. Although, again, the climb from that second tier, in my opinion, to the level that Brady is at right now, I mean, that's just such an impossible climb, especially considering where Rodgers is right now in his career age-wise. But never say never, because, you know, who would have thought that, you know, at 43, you know, Tom's still doing what he's doing.
I think realistically the only one who's, like, close to Brady, and again... unlike what some people say, and we talked about this before the episode, so a little inside jokes here, but winning's super important. And you look at a guy like Otto Graham, who won and also really elevated the game in terms of downfield accuracy and kind of using the entire field as a true weapon. And, you know, he was incorporating the stuff that we talked about in the Packers Look Pack series, and talked about Don Hutson and how he completely changed the game. And the Browns in the 50s were utilizing those route running concepts. So they were able to maximize, you know, what the generation before did and really help push football forward to the next generation. And as quarterbacks like Johnny Unitas and Roger Staubach got into the league, they, you know, looked at how Graham played the game, and, you know, 10 professional seasons of football, he was in the championship game every year. So obviously Brady has more, 14 championship games appearances now. But, you know, Graham, just a winner with the Browns, right? Which is weird to say, the Browns winning all the time. But it took that kind of perpetual winning. Like, even Joe Montana, you know, they've got the four Super Bowls, and they were up there. But is he that close to Tom Brady?
Not anymore, honestly. And I know people, and again, I always say it's no disrespect to these guys, but I mean, Joe Montana at one point was the gold standard, and Tom has lapped him in almost every aspect of everything. He has lapped him, and he has the second most ... playoff, whatever, you know what I mean? Insert whatever stat or win or whatever. That's Joe Montana, and Tom Brady's lapped him. So again, it's the fact that this keeps happening. Like I said earlier, for Tom and the Bucks right now, this is house money. They're getting to the conference championship game. It's important, and obviously they want to win, but this is house money for them. They weren't necessarily expected to do that, certainly by not everyone, because hey, new team, new this, new that, Brady's washed, this, that, and the other. But they're here, and they have a very legitimate shot to win this game. And I like what you guys said about, you know, forget about week five or whatever. I mean, this is exactly what we're saying about the Saints game this past week, was forget about what happened 8 weeks ago when the Bucs got stomped. You know how much better this team is from that point on? That was Antonio Brown's first game. They're coming into the game, they had won five in a row. They don't turn the ball over anymore. The offense is looking more and more like that Patriots offense that we're used to seeing out of Brady. So all week leading up to this past game, it was like, oh, well, the Saints beat them 38-3. Well, yeah, that was 2.5 months ago. So in this same sense, the Bucs players, hopefully, and some of the fans are not doing that, or hopefully not assuming that victory is given because they beat them 3 months ago. That's not how football works.
And to that point, I believe that game was Devontae Adams' first game back from injury. So he was not 100% either. I mean, Ed, you mentioned turnovers, right? And I know, Jesse, you echo this too, probably. Turnovers is the big key to this game. That's what really changed the tide for the game, you know, the week six game. Packers were leading, and then the pick six, and the rest kind of fell downhill from there. Totally swiped momentum. If the Packers play mistake-free, certainly turnover-free football, that'll certainly go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Everything you guys said, you know, like, I agree with a lot of it. I'll just say, you know, Brady's in his own tier on his own, right? I'm kind of like you, Ian, where you talk about Hall of Fames and all that. It's hard to get into. Brady's got his own tier. Then there's a lot of stuff in between right after that. So, and that we can argue for 4 weeks and we'll never get to the bottom of it. But yeah, you're talking about this team. This Buccaneers team is a good team. They were a good team last year with a quarterback that threw 30 interceptions. Insert a guy that doesn't make mistakes, you know, then add a few more pieces. This is a heck of a roster. It really is, right? And that's what scares me. You know, it's not just Tom Brady. It's not just, you know, this is a good team. This is a good football team that has pieces at every level. I mean, I don't know if Antonio Brown's going to go. He didn't practice today. His knee's messed up, so he might not be 100%, but they have legitimate weapons. They have a defense that is opportunistic. They make plays. And you just look at their season. If they lose a turnover battle, that's where their losses came from, right? Mm-hmm. When they win it, they don't lose. And I said that in the article, the Packers got to play clean. You want to beat them? We play clean. We can win this game. Or I'll go out to say that we will win this game if we don't make turnovers. Now, if you give Brady an extra opportunity, because what happened last week? Every time that ball got turned over, what'd they do? They scored. Mm-hmm. That's how you win football games. That's why you are the GOAT. That's why you're a killer. Because when another team makes a mistake, they capitalize. You have to take that away to beat this team.
And a lot of his turnovers in particular this season came in bunches. So, you know, five of his, you know, I'm going to say 12 interceptions, but anyone who saw his last interception, that was the throw that, yeah, Scotty Miller caught the ball, fell to the ground, and the ball popped up in the, like, it's 12 interceptions, but you know what I'm saying. Five of his actual 11 interceptions came against the Saints in game one and game eight. And, you know, the half of the other ones came in the first half of the season. And I remember, Kyle, you and I, we talked fantasy purposes leading into the season. Well, what are you going to see out of this Bucs offense? Well, I mistakenly thought that Gronk was going to heat up early in the season and tail off. Well, I was wrong. It's the exact opposite, which is great for the Bucs. But I also figured that there was going to be some growing pains. I mean, the team, you guys saw it last year with a new system, a new coach, with the same, you know, personnel for the most part, how much there needs time to kind of adapt to everything. And this Buccaneers team was learning on the fly. And on top of that, they were trying to learn how to be more disciplined because, again, Bruce Arians teams aren't necessarily disciplined. And I think the stability brought on by a guy like Tom Brady, big time quarterbacks have that effect. You know, it has a trickle down effect. So all of a sudden this team starts to shape it up a little bit. And you're looking at a team who at the beginning of the season, you would have thought would have set the record for most number of penalties taken, but I believe finished with the same number of accepted penalties against as the Packers. So, you know, we're talking about a team that in the second half of the season became far more disciplined. And after the bye week, they started to finally shift their offense because It was maddening to watch this team continuously on every single first down run to the left of the guard or the right of the guard, and that was it. Hand up, line up in I formation, hand the ball off, and it became so predictable. And what that does is it forces you to take bad shots down the field. So that's what we saw a lot in earlier in the season, where in that really bad 4-week stretch where Brady was throwing deep balls, and it was just like, okay, what is he doing or what's this offense doing? There's no rhyme or reason to it. So coming out of the bye week, you're seeing them throw far more on first down, which is in turn setting up the run as opposed to the opposite, where people believe, oh, you have to run to set up the pass. No, with Tom Brady and guys like Aaron Rodgers, you pass to set up the run and everything else you do in this offense. And I think that's the most important change that this Bucs team has made, because now we've seen over the course of their 6-game winning streak, we've seen them average close to 30 points a game, if not more. Both playoff games, they scored over 30, and they're not turning the ball over. And as you guys said, that's the most important thing. And that's why I think the Bucs come into this game in pretty good shape. But, you know, they're playing a lot better quarterback and a lot better offense this week, though.
Yeah, great points. Especially, I know Arians kind of took a shot at Belichick this week when he said, you know, I'm letting Tom kind of coach this team. And, you know, that's Arians. He likes the competition, right? He's not afraid to pull punches. But at the same time, hey, this team hasn't had that. They have not had that kind of leader. You know, I'll go back to, like, you know, the late 90s teams that were in the Super Bowl. They haven't had that kind of leadership. So I think that's what Brady brings, that's the X factor, right? That's what he's bringing. As good as he is on the field, he's that field general where when he speaks – people take it, and he makes everybody better around him.
And this is a perfect example why things like using EPA doesn't sum up in a stat, no offense to stat people out there, sum up exactly what certain players do and their value. Because guys like Brady, guys like Aaron Rodgers, they command so much more respect, not only from their teammates, but from coaches, from players that they're playing, that it has an impact on the game. And it's not just a saying, because – I mean, look, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are literally the worst team in NFL history. They have the worst winning percentage. They haven't won a playoff game since the Super Bowl in 2002. They had, coming into this year, 6 playoff wins. I mean, hell, if they win the Super Bowl this year, Tom Brady will have won 4 playoff games when this franchise only had 6 since 1976. Like,
that's insane.
People want to pass that off as a coincidence, but it's not. And these are some of the impacts that players like this have that aren't accounted for in the stat sheet. But, you know, we'll see at the end of the year who's hanging a banner or who's participating in a Super Bowl. So,
did they have a first round bye in the playoffs in 2002?
No. I don't think so. Because it was the Eagles. I believe it was the Eagles. You're right. Yeah, they didn't even have a first round bye.
So 6 playoff games in their history up to this point, and four of them were that year in the Super Bowl. So, you know, that tells you what you need to know about Tom Brady and what he's about to do here. But I think we've talked enough about quarterbacks. You know, Tremont Williams got the good talk early, but it was a big chunk of quarterbacks after that. So he gave Williams his respect. But truthfully, I mean, good quarterbacks, and we know that for the Packers, certainly, are only as good as the offensive lines that protect them. And one thing I actually forgot to mention in the reaction episode, we did talk about how, incredible the pass rush was. Certainly Kenny Clark, Za'Darius Smith, and Rashad Gary, and how those three really, really took it to the Rams offensive line. But, just preparing for this episode, it really struck me as, wait a minute, the Rams offensive line this year is really one of the best, and they had Whitworth back, and it was his second game back. He came back against the Seahawks game and looked really dominant in those games, so don't think he's not, maybe not 100%, but certainly not hindered as to where that's the reason they dominated. The Rams, according to Football Outsiders, ranked second in adjusted sack rate, their pass protection metric. Bucks are third. So while it's an excellent offensive line, the Packers showed last week they can get it done. Now, I do think part of the reason the Bucs are third is maybe Tom Brady, back to the quarterbacks, but, you know, how quickly he throws the ball out, which, again, makes it difficult on the pass rushers. So that is, again, one of Jesse's key matchups there. It really, truly is. And you got to think that trio of Clark, Gary Clark, Z-Nier, okay, yeah, that doesn't work. I'll stop improvising there. But that trio is going to be really important.
Yeah. The Rams tackle heavy, really good and decent on the inside, and we exploited it. Yeah. Well, first of all, right now, Rashawn Gary, since I think weeks 15 or 16, so the last month, has been the best pass rusher in the NFL. So he's coming on. That's awesome. Like, the dude's playing great. I'll tell you what, the Bucs got a solid offensive line. They play really good together, but you know, they had to insert, they have a, well, I can't remember the right guard's name that they had to insert that just started, which he wasn't a weakness, but like Ryan Jensen is a bully. So like they have an attitude, which I don't think the Rams had. So the Rams are good, but like this Bucs group plays, they play like we're going to kick your butt and we don't give a crap. Tristan Wirfs as a rookie has been really, I don't think he's given up a sack in like the last like 8 weeks. Probably the weakest spot is Smith on the left side, and I wouldn't even call him weak. So they're good. It's going to be a battle, man. It's going to be a battle in the trenches again.
Yeah, you're right about Ryan Jensen. He's got a little snarl to him. He will get in your face. He'll get under your skin. And look, from an offensive lineman standpoint, I love that. You know, yes. Obviously, you know, like I look at it, I'm like, yeah, I want him to do it. Now, don't start taking penalties and all of a sudden then we have a problem. But you brought up Tristan Wirfs. He's been fantastic. I'll throw Rob Gronkowski into the mix. 2 weeks ago against Washington, and they're a pretty potent defensive line. He didn't catch a single pass. I think he was targeted maybe once. Might have been his best game of the season, because for most of that game, he singled up Chase Young. Like, he was just manhandling Chase Young. And this is the thing, and you know, we've talked about, and there's this discussion, like, I think Travis Kelce is an incredible talent. I mean, there's no doubt denying what he can do on that offensive field. But, you know, if you're going to talk about who's a better complete tight end, well, there's no question, because I agree. I think George Kittle is a more complete tight end when he's healthy. And this was I was saying that before Gronk came back, but you know, Gronk isn't what he was as a pass catcher several years ago, but his blocking is incredible, and he can go toe to toe with pretty much anyone you want to throw out there. And that is such a huge advantage for this team and for a quarterback who, like you guys mentioned, on top of everything, gets the ball out quickly. So you can have a pretty good offensive line, and it can become great because the cohesion within the line, and then, of course, the play from the quarterback makes everything a whole lot easier. And you get that with Aaron Rodgers as well, of course, and all these elite quarterbacks. But both have a lot of talent across the board. So this is an addition to just being just naturally talented in and of itself.
And real quick, the Packers, in terms of like the tight end snap percentage, I think is also important to show that how important blocking is. You know, I think we could all agree Lewis is the better blocker between Mercedes Lewis and Robert Tonyan. But on the season, the snap split is 60-40, right? And yes, Tonyan's been such a great weapon, double-digit touchdowns, kind of use him all over the field, not just as a red zone threat. In fact, it is more long touchdowns, which is weird with tight ends. But, you know, Lewis being on the field so much also speaks to that importance.
Yeah, so, you know, talking about Gronk, it's Lewis, who is not as good as a pass catcher as Gronk ever was or even still today. But that is a huge piece, like you're saying, where when he's out there, that's having another tackle on the field. Like when we played the Bears a couple weeks ago, Lewis is blocking him by himself. Like, who does that? Like, there's Gronk and him and probably George Kittle. George Kittle, I think, is a god when it comes to tight ends. But anyways, those guys can do that. So guess what? You have them on the field, everybody's thinking run, right? It's going to always be a run. It's going to always be this. It's going to be this. Yeah, you can sneak them out in the flat. And Mercedes Lewis, who caught a couple passes last year, hey, he's picking up a few small plays here. And I know last week, you know, Gronk, they tried to, you know, get him involved in the passing game. Maybe it wasn't successful, but you have to cover him, right? You have to respect that. And respecting that opens up other guys. So it's just another wrinkle where you can't forget about any of these pass catchers. I didn't even talk about Gronk in my article, and I kind of felt bad afterwards because it wasn't fair, right? Like I said, all these weapons, he still is one, even if he doesn't catch a ball.
Well, and give you know, give the Saints some credit. Malcolm Jenkins, that's a great matchup for guys like Gronk. Like they did a really good job of playing him tight because there were opportunities there. There was a couple you can say, oh, it was overthrown a little bit or it went off his hand, so he should have caught it. Either way, they were close, but the defenders were right there. So I think the Saints did do a good job of limiting his opportunities. But that's the thing. Like you said, he could sit there and block for a majority of the series. And all it takes is him to break out up the seam and you're staring at a tight end rumbling down the field for 45 yards or catching a ball 30 yards down the field. And by the time you know what's going on, the Bucs are, you know, doing that half jog down the field, getting set up to take a snap in your own zone. And, you know, who knows? So like that's the advantage of having a guy like Gronk, because like you said, when he's in there, it's not just, oh, it's definitely a run, it's definitely a pass. It's, what the hell are they doing? I have no idea. So,
right. Yeah. And to transition into it, if it's cool, I was going to say that the way we have to play you guys, when you're saying how the Saints did, we have to challenge all these pass catchers. If we let Brady just dink and dunk, he will. He's not afraid to take everything underneath, right? And like with all these guys, I thought the Saints did pretty dang good. I mean, if you look at the numbers and the opportunities, they were in the face of all the wide receivers, and they were willing to take a chance on the back end because they do have talent at safety. And I think the Packers, and I know Mike Pettine, that's not his normal style, but he has shown that he will do that. And I think that is the key against this team. You know, now pressure matters. Now we have to be able to get pressure on Brady with less, but I trust our secondary where we can play tight, you know, in their face and force them that short stuff's not going to be there. I think that's huge in this game. It's a huge deciding piece of this game.
I might have a stat that might scare the living bejesus out of you guys. Tom Brady versus Mike Pettine defenses.
Yeah, I know.
This is sort of like the whole, oh, look what they did in week five. Well, technically none of this has any bearing on what's going to happen this week. Because, well, that's just how things work. But there is something to say, because like as good as, let's take Pittsburgh, for example, as great as Pittsburgh was every single year of defense, every single year, they would beat up on every team except the Patriots. And they would just come in and just steamroll them. And it was just like, well, you're the same defensive coordinator doing the same thing over and over and over again. What do you expect?
Yep.
So I agree. Is this going to be an example of that? I'm not saying that. I just, sometimes I like those like little tidbits, and you know, Packers fans out there, if it makes you lose a little bit of sleep, I'm okay with that.
No, but I mean, it's something you got to look at. Right. And yeah. I think that's where Coach LaFleur is at, where he needs to say, hey, Mike, you know, we've been doing this, you know, we're cool with like letting long drives go on and stuff, but hey, maybe we need to trust you. Cause we did this, you know, remember when we played the Niners and earlier this year, which, yeah, the Niners weren't good, but it was, they were questioning his job and saying, hey, or Philly was a big game too, where it's like, you know, this might be his last game because they might get sick of this. And bam, he went like super, like 80% man coverage, challenged receivers, and it worked, you know? So sometimes it's, hey, you got to trust your eyes and go with it.
You know, you got to stick to a game plan, because like, here's the thing, you got to realize you could do everything right against a Tom Brady led offense and still lose. That's a possibility, because I mean, again, these are the type of quarterbacks you're going up against, the Bradys, the Rodgers. They can overcome anything that you might throw at them. The point is you can't dwell on that. So if you're the defense and you get burned in that first drive, or you're the offense and you have a game plan that you think is going to work and you know that's going to work, don't all of a sudden switch it up for the sake of switching things up, because that leads to more mistakes. And that's when things snowball and these games get out of hand. So the Packers are good enough that, yeah, you know what? The Bucs offense and Brady, they're going to get theirs. You know, you could do everything right and he could still outthrow your coverage, or one of these receivers can get behind the defense. It's just, it's going to happen. They just can't let it become a continuous problem, because like, hey, these people, you know, players are, you know, they're human too. So, you know, they're going to let these things mentally affect them, and coaches as well. So coaches are going to start calling games a little bit differently if they panic, and you don't want to do that if you believe in your game plan and you know how to beat a team.
You know, Jesse, you mentioned it, the unpredictability, right? With the Packers defense, they need to kind of not telegraph what they're doing and make Tom Brady guess as much as possible. I think the offense does have to kind of employ that as well. I think not running or running in not so obvious situations. I don't like a bit like what Ian said with the Bucks. I don't want to see them just run up the middle every first and 10. I'd rather see the Packers probably be throwing on first and 10, run on the first and shorts, run on the second and long. If you do lose some yards, run then when they're not expecting it. I think that'll probably be key because the Bucks are such a great run defense, and just, you know, a 1 yard gain on first down just doesn't seem like it's that worth it. If that's what ends up happening, maybe I'm losing a little faith in Aaron Jones there and this tremendous offensive line. But again, play, you know, not to say that the Bucks are weak in the secondary, but it does seem like that's how to beat them more. You have to beat them throwing more than running.
So, I mean, I hate to keep going back to the quarterbacks, but you know, I'm cool with, you know, both of them are going to get two calls, right? They're going to get to call it at the line, and what they see or what they think's to their advantage, take advantage of it. So the last time we played the Bucks, even though it didn't matter, guess what? We tried to do our outside zone game against an elite, physical, fast linebacker group, and they kicked our tails. It didn't work, right? They were beating us to the edge. You know, they ate up our blockers. We couldn't do crap on that. It doesn't work against this team. You cannot run that. You know, but since then, we kind of changed. Last week against the Rams, hey, we're going to run up the middle. We'll take 3 yards. We'll take 4 yards. We'll take 5 yards. Guess what? You're going to play a light box. We're going to attack it. And we did. And I'm cool. Hey, first down, you're going to load the box. You're going to, hey, let's take a 5 yard pass. We'll take it. You know, it doesn't have to be sexy. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. And it's going to open up a lot of different things. And that's in even, you know, the Bucks, yeah, top two defense against the run, but they have shown that you can kind of get some yardage inside on them, you know, and don't run outside the tackles. It's not going to work. Like, I think we learned our lesson last time, you know, I just don't think that's even an option. But, you know, out of shotgun, some stuff up the middle, I think it could be there, you know, and they start stopping that. Okay, well, then use your passing game, spread them out a little bit and try to, they want to get physical with our receivers and stuff. Okay, just try to get some double moves or some, you know, short stuff, just whatever can work, use it. So I trust Aaron Rodgers on that 100%. Going back to it, you know, they're going to go to the line with some options. He's going to try to read this defense and you can attack it how you want to.
I know people say all the time, oh, it's not really about Rodgers versus Brady. It kind of is, though, because like, yeah, there's so many other things that go into this game. But like you said, it all comes back to the quarterback play, because, you know, both these teams have talent on both sides of the ball. They both have some pretty good offensive lines. They're both decent teams. But outside of having, you know, with those quarterbacks, they're great teams. So at the end of the day, it's really going to come down to these two guys. And I think you're going to see both of them throw a lot. I think that's just the game it's going to be. I mean, you're going to get an Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady game, and assuming it's not like 35 below and winds blowing everywhere, you're seeing those two guys throw the ball. This isn't going to be an Aaron Jones and Leonard Fournette game or Ronald Jones game. Like, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady, you're going to get Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady. So I think ultimately, it all does go through there. And I think you're right. You're going to see two guys that are great at what they do pre-snap, great at what they do during the snap, and great at what they do post-snap, just kind of seeing who's going to blink first. And like you said, it may be just one turnover. It may just be one missed third down opportunity. It may just be one instance that gives one of these quarterbacks the edge. And I'm all for it. So
just don't go to special teams, because that's where we really like to screw the pooch. Jesus.
Well, the Bucks gave up, if it wasn't for a penalty, they would have given up back-to-back like 60-yard punt returns, and we may have been talking about you may have been talking to someone about the Saints in this game and not the Buccaneers. So that's definitely a wild card. I'll give you that on both sides.
Divisional weekend, we did see a couple games where, as much as it's not, the quarterbacks aren't facing up one against each other, the quarterback play really did determine the game. I think of the you know, well, actually the Bucks Saints game is a pretty good example of that, right? You know, Breeze and the three interceptions, Brady taking advantage, throwing touchdowns off of those turnovers. So, you know, the mass difference there. But the one I'm really thinking of is actually the Bills-Ravens game. Both defenses played extraordinary. It was really tough to run for both teams, so it really did come down to quarterback play. Josh Allen, was it spectacular, explosive? The stats didn't look amazing, but he didn't make the mistakes. Lamar Jackson did, and it really did make the difference in that game. And I get the sense it'll be the same thing here in well, maybe in both NFC Championship games, actually, which is funny, because looking at both, both home teams, the Packers and the Chiefs, are favored by three. And, you know, a couple of players in concussion that practiced in a limited fashion. For the Packers, it was Kingsley Keke. You know, would like to get him back into the defensive line rotation. Maybe a little bit more important on who that player is for the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. Still in the concussion protocol, but a limited practice participant. So
Did you mean Chad Henne?
well, that's the thing. Is there a sense that Chad Henne could start the AFC Championship game?
No.
No way.
Not happen. At all. I will bet everything that I own and that's on my body that that's not going to happen. And we all know it.
This Vegas line, Chiefs 3-point favorites, really speaks to that. Like this line tells me they're expecting Mahomes to play.
He's playing. It's just I don't know. I don't want to get into all this stuff and all that and say, you know, concussion, this and that. He's playing. It's going to happen. There's not a doubt in my mind.
yeah, that's my feeling. No doubt.
This, and I know talking to some people, Scott Connor, he was kind of thinking, is this going to be one of those things where they're not going to put out a line until Mahomes is fully cleared, and that might not happen until Saturday. So what are they doing? I think someone mentioned at one site, Bills actually opened up as 1.5-point favorites, like on the Sunday night, and then, you know, a few hours later it was the Chiefs by one, right? So like it instantly flipped. So I think that the even from that night, I think we got the sense that Mahomes was going to be fine. He was going to have no problem clearing concussion protocol. So under the assumption he's playing, you know, I would argue we've got maybe 4 of the 6 best quarterbacks that played this year. I think Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, the only two that aren't in the championship game that I think are you know, the top 5 guys. And, you know, was Josh Allen not the 6th best quarterback at the very least this year? I think he really did elevate his game to where he was that next guy right outside that elite tier of Rodgers, Brady, Mahomes, Watson, Wilson, whatever order you want to put them all in. Right? Like, I mean, are we buying that everything we've seen from Josh Allen thus far is real?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, based on, you know, again, now is it sustainable? You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens next year. But we're talking about this year, and what we've seen this year has been a guy who's turned his game around. I mean, specifically accuracy. I'm not talking just completion percentage, because we all know that. Accuracy does not equal completion percentage and vice versa. It's more than there's just that. He's elevated his game in just about every aspect, and he's a big reason why the Bills are here. Now, it helps with Stephon Diggs, sharp, absolutely. But, you know, just because you have a really good receiver, it doesn't all of a sudden make you more accurate. I mean, you still have to throw the ball in the general vicinity of a receiver. They don't have stretch arms. I mean, unless you're Randy Moss, you know, back in the day, we could just kind of go up and catch whatever. But, you know, outside of that, like, you have to be somewhat accurate, even with elite talent. And I think Josh Allen has certainly proven that he's turned the corner, at least this year. We'll see what happens after the fact. But now, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I was a huge fan when he got drafted. I was at that draft, and I said, he's going to be the best one out of this. Big arm, can move, big guy. He just needed to hone in his accuracy and completion percentage. And like you're saying, like, you know, the completion percentage doesn't matter if you're hitting your guys or doing this, you know. But he went from last year, like, he can get there, and he was using his feet to, hey, I became a quarterback. And it's that Bills team is going to be a tough out. They are built to play with anybody. They're my Super Bowl pick, so I'm going to stay with it.
So I covered the Bucs. I'm a Patriots fan. I grew up in New England. I lived up there 28 years. There is nothing in my life that I want right now than to see, after so many years of futility, so many years of losing, the Buffalo Bills finally escaping Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, only to make it to the Super Bowl to face Tom Brady and lose. So there's part of me that pettiness that's rooted like that it New Englander in me. There's nothing I want more than that. So well, think about how great that would be, except if you're a Bills fan.
Well, I was going to say, now we're going to you've inflicted a bit of pain on Bills fans listening, and now maybe you allow them to inflict it back to you. So why don't you let the folks know where they can follow you? And I mean, I know you've got so much to plug with Full Press Coverage, so we'll take the time now if you want.
Well, I'll start with my personal handle, because that's where all the real fun is when it comes to quarterback debating, I guess. But at IGLEN31, and just give at Full Press NFL and at FP_coverage a follow, because that's pretty much your go-to with everything. And you'll be able to see all of the hockey stuff, football stuff, all that good nonsense. And of course, how could I forget? Download the Full Press Coverage app, because, hey, everything's there and it's very easy to just click the button and browse everything. So I think I covered it all.
Free, folks, as I say every episode, go get it now, download it for free. Also
for last.
While the season is still on, while we still have content, of course, as you mentioned, we're gonna be, you know, Full Press Coverage the off season once the NFL season's done. I mean, we're already, you know, some teams are already putting out draft profiles already. So Jesse already did a mock draft earlier in January, so you know, it's, you know, it doesn't end after the Super Bowl, folks, although continue staying with us for these playoff games on Twitter at FPC_Packers. Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212, and I'm at Senra Says. So, Jesse, any final thoughts for the listeners this episode?
You know it. Go Pack, go. Big game.
Yeah, you heard that here first, folks. I guess we've said it 18 games so far. Hoping to make it make it to game number 19. It'd be nice.
19th game is always pretty good.
Yeah. So, find out next time if we get there on the Full Press Packers Pod.